The Tom Woods Show, episode 991.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, you want an excellent night's sleep at a terrific price? Then check out a Casper mattress. As a matter of fact, you can get $50 toward a Casper mattress by going to casper.com/woods and using promo code Woods at checkout. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here, by myself today. I want to tell you about something I just learned about in the private Facebook group, which you can get access to via supportinglisteners.com. In there, I found a link to an article about something that's been going on over the past couple of weeks that I haven't known about at all, just did not hit my radar at all, but that I find very interesting for a number of reasons that I think will become obvious. And it's not just because I'm interested in free speech. I mean, I think most reasonable people are in favor of free speech. But sometimes the people who spend all their time talking about how much they are in favor of free speech are kind of boring the rest of us to death. Because, okay, now that we've established that it's okay for us to talk, can we now talk about the substance of what we're saying instead of spending all our time talking about our right to say it? That's great, and I'm glad that that's established, but can we now actually have the conversation itself that so many people are so ostentatiously supporting our right to have? That's great, but now let's talk about that thing. So there's a woman who is a professor at the law school at the University of Pennsylvania, and her name is Amy Wax, and she is a member of Heterodox Academy, which has Jonathan Haidt as a member. Maybe he even runs it. I have to go check. But Jonathan Haidt's been a guest on the show before, too. And I think he thinks of himself as being, I don't know, maybe a centrist or as far as one can be from non-ideological. I'm not really sure, but I certainly would not call him a left winger in the, you know, in an ideological sense. And nor would he want to call himself a right winger, because that would not be accurate either. But Haidt is a very, very insightful guy. And I'll link to the couple of times I talked to him on our show notes page today, tomwoods.com/991. If you haven't listened to Jonathan Haidt, you really owe it to yourself to do that. Anyway, Amy Wax is a member of that Heterodox Academy that he belongs to, and she published an article at philly.com, so obviously philly.com, and it was about, well, the title of the article is Paying the Price for Breakdown of the Country's Bourgeois Culture. She co-authored the article with somebody else, a professor at the University of San Diego School of Law. But for the sake of simplicity, and because, as Jonathan Haidt puts it, it's Amy Wax who's really at the center of the ensuing controversy, we'll focus primarily on her. Haidt wrote up an overview of what has happened to Professor Wax in the wake of the release of this article. So I'm going to link to the article, and I'm going to link to Jonathan Haidt's write-up about it, also at tomwoods.com/991. Well, anyway, the point is the article was controversial, although there was a time in American history when it would not have been even remotely controversial. It would have been common sense, perfectly and immediately evident to everyone. She's saying that a lot of vulnerable people have really paid a heavy price for the decline of bourgeois sensibilities in America, that there are certain principles, certain ways you ought to organize your life, certain ways you ought to look at the world that make for success, and there are certain ways that make for self-sabotage. In fact, when I read, a couple years ago, I read a book called Secrets of the Millionaire Mind by T. Harv Eker, and at first I thought to myself, at least at the beginning of the book, I thought, this is ridiculous. Nobody thinks this way. He outlined all these different ways of thinking that you need to just abandon. If you don't have any hope for success, you've got to get away from these destructive ways of thinking. And I thought, nobody thinks this way. This is ridiculous, a ridiculous straw man. But he was right and I was wrong. Especially, I've really gotten to see more and more of this up close. There is a whole, subculture. There's so much dysfunction in American society today. It's absolutely unbelievable. And it's not like you can just say, well, in the inner cities, there are a lot of pathologies, but that's just the way inner cities are. Because that's not true. because you see it in the suburbs, you see it in different socioeconomic groups than you might have seen it before. So there's a major problem in a lot of ways in terms of the way people look at wealth, savings, getting ahead, success, education, behavior, the delaying of gratification, marriage, children, child rearing, envy. I could just go on and on and on. And I would say there is a dramatic chunk of America that has destructively absurd views on all these topics. And the consequences are all around us. So what Amy Wax was saying is that maybe it would have been better if instead of just dispensing with bourgeois norms as terrible forms of oppression, we might have paused to take 12 seconds to think that maybe there was a reason they existed. And this is part of the reason I just cannot get away from thinking of myself, in part at least, as a conservative. Not to say that I'm a political conservative, because I just can't imagine having any use for those people. But the idea that practices and beliefs of long standing stand accused, basically, are always on the defensive, and we have to assume they're there for no good reason, and that the accumulated experience of the ages really is nothing as compared to the wisdom of people living in 2017. Can you even say that with a straight face? We're so smart in 2017, we don't need your backward superstitions. Really? 2017, you looked around at how things are going in 2017 and you can say that? So I've always been inclined to think this way. I think of society as being like a house, and some of the walls in that house are supporting walls. So if you knock them out, the whole house comes down. Other walls are there for decoration or just for marking out the rooms. You could knock those out and the house stays up. But how do you know now, if we think of the house as being society, and the walls as being various norms that have been established over the centuries, how do you know which ones are supporting walls and which ones are dispensable? Well, you don't, so you ought to at least proceed with caution instead of just arbitrarily and barbarically knocking down walls left and right and assuming that a great age of human liberation is at hand, because maybe that's not going to turn out to be the case. So let me read to you the opening line from this article, and I'm going to tell you there is one thing that I can see somebody taking issue with, or maybe two things I could see people taking issue with, but nothing other than that. So the article begins this way. Too few Americans are qualified for the jobs available. Male working-age labor force participation is at depression-era lows. Opioid abuse is widespread. Homicidal violence plagues inner cities. Almost half of all children are born out of wedlock, and even more are raised by single mothers. Many college students lack basic skills, and high school students rank below those from 24 other countries. Okay, well, that paragraph actually is okay. Then she goes on to say, the causes of these phenomena are multiple and complex, but no doubt the breakdown of the country's bourgeois culture plays a role. And then she lays out what some of those principles were. She says, that culture laid out the script we were all supposed to follow. Get married before you have children and strive to stay married for their sake. Get the education you need for gainful employment, work hard, and avoid idleness. Go the extra mile for your employer or client. Be a patriot ready to serve the country. Be neighborly, civic-minded, and charitable. Avoid coarse language in public. Be respectful of authority. Eschew substance abuse and crime. All right, well, of course, I don't like the way the word patriotism is used these days, and it's almost always used in support of things I find appalling. So, and serve the country almost always means go and fight in some war that makes no sense at all, unless it's just to profit certain people. And it just makes no sense. So we'll nix that one. But secondly, an even worse offense is the word eschew. Don't ever use that word. That's a terrible word. That's a terrible word. That's a word that just says you learned your vocabulary lesson well in the seventh grade. But that is a terrible, terrible, terrible word. It just screams out seventh grade vocabulary word. It's awful. I can't really put my finger on why it's so bad, but eschew the word eschew. It's the worst. It is horrible. Horrible. Never, ever, ever use it. So, yes, we should write a letter urging Professor Wax to avoid the use of that word. However, what actually happened, now she goes on and defends this, and she says, look, we have different groups in America that are not playing by that cultural script, and it turns out that there are real consequences. And then she lists some of these cultures. She says, we have the single-parent antisocial habits prevalent among some working-class whites. Well, that's obvious, right? Remember the episode on that wonderful book, Hillbilly Elegy? There's obviously overwhelming evidence of this. Then she says, the anti-acting white rap culture of inner-city blacks. Well, for heaven's sake, I think even Jesse Jackson has condemned that. I mean, I think you can actually find even people like Al Sharpton from time to time saying, now, look, it's ridiculous to go around saying that academic success is not worth pursuing because that's what white people do. So in other words, that's pretty obvious and noted by just about everyone. So no big problem there. And then she mentions the anti-assimilation ideas gaining ground among some Hispanic immigrants. Well, this I'm less familiar with. But the point is, she's saying that in a variety of cultural contexts in America, these anti-bourgeois norms are beginning to take root. And this might be, and this is my commentary, this might be fun for upper-class liberals to experiment with, to talk about all these allegedly liberating ideas. But the people who pay the price for it are the most vulnerable, because they're the problems associated with raising children under these circumstances and with these values are amplified and multiplied. And the social science literature overwhelmingly bears this out, and we'll get to that in a minute. All right, so she's saying that I think one reason that we're seeing all these pathologies across American society is that culturally we're sending the wrong message to people. And there's reason to think this, because we're seeing this breakdown in all these areas that where we once had a kind of cultural consensus that no longer exists. All right, well, that may be provocative in 2017 because of how odd our society has become, but that's obviously not evil or beyond the pale. It's just an opinion you disagree with, right? Wrong. Over at the University of Pennsylvania Law School, well, they can't move to denounce her fast enough. They really don't like that cultural thing she said, or that she said all cultures are not equal, or at least they're not equal in preparing people to be productive in an advanced economy. Okay, well, again, this is what Peter Bauer said this decades ago about different countries around the world, and that some of them had ideas, cultural ideas that were dominant, that were compatible with the idea of entrepreneurship, and others had poisonous ideas that were going to make sure that entrepreneurship never got off the ground. Why would that be a priori impossible? All cultures are equally suited to entrepreneurship, and none of them discourage entrepreneurship? Well, that's clearly false, because in the history of Western civilization, we had plenty of people and periods where we saw entrepreneurship diminished or dismissed, or the work of merchants and commercial people disparaged. That was certainly true in much of the first millennium in Western civilization. And in fact, that's precisely the thesis of Deirdre McCloskey's trilogy of books on bourgeois values. And again, we talked to her back on episode, I don't know, but I'll try and remember to link to that if my memory serves. Why don't we write that down? Got the old piece of paper here. The old piece of paper. I said I was going to link to something else I've already forgotten about. Let's say we'll do Hillbilly Elegy. We'll do the one about welfare pathology. This is going to be a great show notes page, tomwoods.com/991. Anyway, but McCloskey's whole thesis is that there has to be some explanation for why sustained economic growth took so darn long to achieve. And it can't just be technological. It can't be. And she goes through all the different reasons. And she says it has to be ideological. In other words, it has to be cultural ideas that were current and taken for granted by everyone that suddenly liberated the entrepreneurial class. Well, that's, again, that's seems like an eminently defensible thesis, that culture plays a role. How could it not? And what reason would we have a priori to think that all cultural attributes and outlooks are absolutely mathematically equal in terms of their outcomes for entrepreneurship? What possible a priori reason would there be for that, other than that we accept, I mean, unless you just accept egalitarianism as an a priori truth and then go from there, in which case you're completely unscientific. So in response to this, we get a statement on Amy Wax and Charlottesville. Charlottesville, right? Has nothing whatsoever to do with Amy Wax at all. But 54 Penn students and alumni issued a statement on Amy Wax and Charlottesville. The self-importance of these people is just overwhelming. Here's our official statement. We have a statement. So here's what they're upset about in the statement. They criticize Amy Wax and her co-author for extolling the virtues of white cultural practices of the 50s that, if understood within their socio-cultural context, stem from the very same malignant logic of heteropatriarchal, class-based white supremacy that plagues our country today. These cultural values and logics are steeped in anti-blackness and white heteropatriarchal respectability, i.e. two heteroparent homes. I don't think I can continue this. That's as far as I'm going to go. So the letter reads something like that. Then we get a call to action. This is the time for members of the University of Pennsylvania community who claim to fight systemic inequality to speak up, especially those anthropologists and scholars who claim an understanding of culture and who recognize culture talk's deleterious potential as a vehicle for racism and sexism. We call for the denunciation not of racism as some abstract concept out there, in Charlottesville, in America, by the poor uneducated white, or by an individual racist ideologue, but for a denunciation of racism at the University of Pennsylvania. In particular, we must denounce faculty members that are complicit in and uphold white supremacy, normalizing it as if it were just another viable opinion in our educational tenures at the university. We call for the University of Pennsylvania administration, as well as faculty, to directly confront Wax and Alexander's op-ed as racist and white supremacist discourse, and to push for an investigation into Wax's advocacy for white supremacy. That's the response. White supremacy. Now, any reasonable definition of white supremacy would mean, like, supremacy. Like, there would be laws on the books saying that the white race is going to be supreme over other races and will get special privileges. I haven't really seen that many people who advocate that, and yet the term white supremacy now is just thrown around to describe everyone, which is what I said would happen, and indeed is happening faster than I could have anticipated. So there is far greater chance that perfectly decent people, like Professor Amy Wax, for heaven's sake, will be harassed and have their lives destroyed than there is that white supremacists will take over America. There is no chance of that. There is no chance of that happening. But there is a chance that normal people will be called white supremacists for saying things that are really not all that edgy, frankly. Or they're only edgy because everybody is a hypersensitive hysteric and we're all walking on eggshells all the time. Well, then Wax's colleagues, 33 of them at the law school, nearly half the faculty, signed an open letter to the University of Pennsylvania community and said, "We write to condemn recent statements our colleague Amy Wax has made in popular media pieces. We categorically reject Wax's claims." In what way is that helpful? Why? Why do you reject them? So you don't think cultural attitudes might have something to do with people's success? Because that's what she's saying. And she's saying it exists across racial groups. Because we obviously see it among whites too. So it's not that she's saying, well, black people just can't be entrepreneurial or something like that. She's saying this is a problem that exists in a variety of cultural settings. But even that didn't save her. Jonathan Haidt has a number of things to say about this whole fiasco, and we'll get to that in just a minute after we thank our sponsor. Hey, everybody, it's Tom Woods, and let me tell you something. One major factor in how you feel every day and in your overall health is the quality of sleep you're getting. You can't make this an afterthought. Sleep is absolutely essential to health, and we're reading about this every single day. And one thing that contributes to a good night's sleep is a good mattress. But Woods, you say, a good mattress will cost me a fortune. Not a Casper mattress. They sell direct to consumers, and they give you an affordable price. It's got just the right sink and just the right bounce. It's got over 20,000 reviews online and an average of 4.8 stars. It's quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress. It's designed, developed, and assembled in the USA to give you an excellent night's sleep so you wake up refreshed. You get free shipping and returns to the US and Canada, and a 100-night trial in your home with free no-hassle returns if you're not happy. And how about this? Get $50 toward your Casper mattress by going to casper.com/woods and using promo code Woods. That's 50 smackers toward your Casper mattress by going to casper.com, casper.com/woods and entering promo code Woods. All right, Jonathan Haidt, who's over at NYU, then comments on the whole situation. He says, does it really make Wax a white supremacist for saying that culture matters for poverty-related outcomes, that not all cultures are equally good for escaping poverty, and that the 1950s American bourgeois cultural script was particularly good for that purpose? No. And he explains why. He says that over the past 10 years, the most intellectually exciting project he was involved in was to moderate a bipartisan working group consisting of 14 of America's top experts on poverty. They worked together for over a year to analyze the existing research literature on poverty and to write up a set of principles and proposals that they thought would actually work to reduce poverty and increase economic mobility. And what he said was the reason that this was such a great experience was that after a while, the scholars were able to, if not agree on everything, reach more or less a consensus. And in particular, he found that even scholars on the left were willing to admit that, yes, the benefits of marriage as an anti-poverty device certainly are very substantial. So, in fact, he says, research by one of our members, Richard Reeves, shows that for children born into the bottom quintile of the income distribution, if their parents are married, they are just about as likely to end up in the top quintile as to remain in the bottom. And Haidt goes on to say, it's not quite that simple. Marriage doesn't create perfect mobility by itself, but its anti-poverty effects are very large. So in other words, says Haidt, Wax was correct based on the available evidence and expert opinion to argue that a strong pro-marriage norm would reduce poverty and blunt or reverse the pernicious social trends she described at the beginning of her article. He says, Wax made an argument about culture and poverty, one that has been espoused in some form by some of the country's top poverty researchers, one that appears to be correct in its general outlines, and one that perennially offends many people. And then he goes on to say, I've gone out of my way to show that Amy Wax's central claim about culture is probably correct, because the necessity of protecting dissent is clearest when the dissenter brings an important and neglected truth into the conversation. But he says the choice to denounce or not denounce should not really hinge on whether Wax was correct in this particular instance. It should hinge on whether she was making an argument in good faith using methods of argumentation that fall within the normal range of her part of the academy. And then finally, he says, I said earlier that I think it's important for the academic community to reflect on this case. In the coming academic year, many of us will receive multiple emails from students and friends asking us to sign open letters and petitions denouncing each other. My advice is to delete them all. We already have bureaucratic procedures for investigating charges of professional misconduct. If you think a professor has said or done something wrong, then write an article or blog post explaining your reasons. But every open letter you sign to condemn a colleague for his or her words brings us closer to a world in which academic disagreements are resolved by social force and political power, not by argumentation and persuasion. I think those are fairly wise words from Jonathan Haidt, but realize what's going on here. Simply to say things like getting and staying married can really help the future prospects of your children or whatever about education and hard work and all these things, that this is all silly white supremacy, that you really are a white supremacist. And if you say these things, we really ought to investigate you for advocacy of white supremacy. So in other words, what are you doing in your private time that probably is aiming at advocating white supremacy? I mean, these people are so hysterical. They probably think there's at least a 50-50 chance Amy Wax is, you know, in some way a supporter of the Ku Klux Klan, you know, that has 3,000 members in the entire U.S. I don't know how you deal with people like that who are in a completely different reality. I've always felt like we're up against people who are not willing to be rational on some level. Let me rephrase that. I don't mean that everybody who disagrees us is irrational, but I mean that people who are, let's say, on the way out there on the extremes, like you're not going to generally talk a communist out of communism. I'm not really going to be able to talk most Nazis out of being Nazis. Maybe. Whitaker Chambers stopped being a communist, so some people do change, I suppose. But what I mean is, on the edges, you've got people who are committed to a set of propositions that they believe in defiance of evidence. And so the idea that white supremacy is a major problem in America today, even if you think racism is a major problem in America today, do you really think white supremacy, after the entire anti-discrimination bureaucracy was instituted and affirmative action programs became available basically everywhere, preferential policies of all kinds, whether it's owning car dealerships or in promotions in different places or in academia, absolutely everywhere, we're really thinking that white supremacy is the major problem? When, if you are called a white supremacist, it can ruin your life. I mean, it can ruin you. You would be fired and never heard from again. So there's something weird about this, something weird about thinking that that's our major problem. But I'm glad we have level-headed people like Jonathan Haidt who are not conservatives or libertarians, but who are just fair-minded and say, look, by no rational definition of white supremacy does Amy Wax qualify for making statements that are defensible on the basis of what most experts in the field say. All right, I don't even know how to conclude this episode except good for Amy Wax and keep on doing it, because the more these people spend their time writing open letters, the less time they can be spending destroying civilization. All right, see you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.